football, fighting, and full nonsense. The Stephen Housen Podcast. Made in Manchester.
Hello, everybody. We are back with another podcast, and tonight, my guest, the bloke that I was looking to catch live in action while I was in LA at the Comedy Store. I saw Rogan and Joey Diaz, which, I'm not going to lie to you, that was who I was going to the Comedy Store for, but this guy impressed me, as did a guy called Kirk Fox. If you've never heard of him, go Google both of these after we finish. So, I've been following his work ever since. I found out that he does a football podcast called the It's the Comic Soccer Rant. Which seems soccer like comic. People have... Soccer comic rant, there we go. Which seems like someone's just thrown like a lot of letters at a fridge and just seen what stuck. He's a United fan.
No.
And I do need to pull you up on something straight away, because the latest podcast that I was listening to, you mentioned that you wanted Liverpool to win the Europa League. Please explain that to me.
Only because it validates the premiership. You know what I mean? Like, I want to feel like we have the best league. So when our teams, if my team ain't going to win nothing and I can't do nothing about it, then I know we're supposed to hate Liverpool at all costs, but I don't want Man U to be in a league where we can't even win, one of our teams can't even win Europa League. You know what I mean? Like, my logic is different.
Yeah. I agree that it's good to be in a strong league and a competitive league, and ultimately UEFA coefficients are based upon that, and you end up with four teams or three teams depending on how successful your team is in European competition. But I can't ever endorse Liverpool winning a fucking throw-in, let alone a match. So as I said, I was lucky enough to see you in August. I was there on my honeymoon with my wife. We did a bit of a tour all around America. We did San Francisco, Yosemite, Monterey, Santa Barbara, LA and Vegas. And while we was in LA, had to hit up the Comedy Store, and I was fucking well impressed. I thought, it's just going to be like, you know, a few guys going up doing a few minutes, but it wasn't. From start to end, everybody was absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you and Kirk Fox really stood out to us, to be honest, as two guys that I've just started following since I come back. And obviously found out about the podcast and found out that you're a United fan, and then was listening to Rogan's podcast. So I know Rogan's podcast might have prepared for you for coming on something as big as this. You know, we might get into the thousands with listens, so, you know, prepare yourself for the deluge on Twitter. So, you know, I heard you telling Rogan about the Premier League last week, and I was like, oh shit, this is an American that actually knows what the fuck he's talking about. So,
right.
Tell us how that happened, how you became a big football fan living over in a place where football's played by guys wearing shoulder pads and helmets.
Because, like I said, we were talking before, I was born in England, right? I grew up in Shepherd's Bush. I went to Walmart Park Elementary School, and every break or recess, we used to play football in the schoolyard. I used to watch the FA Cup growing up. Like, the first time I knew I wanted to be a footballer myself is I saw, like, some footballers in suits getting off the bus to go play the FA Cup. And I was like, shit, I want to be that.
What year was that? Do you know which final it was?
Nah. And I want people to know how young I am. I'm being sarcastic. But, you know, I just wanted to be that. So I played soccer everywhere. Soccer's home. Everywhere I've moved to, I played soccer. I played in England. When I moved to Jamaica, I played in Jamaica. And when I moved to America, I played football in America. You know, football, soccer, you know. Always was on the high school team or tried to make the college team or played recreationally on, like, league teams. Soccer's always been my home. And then, the thing is, when I was in America, I didn't always have access to watching soccer until, like, the 90s, the late 90s, when they had this one-hour show where they would show, like, the news highlights from the Premiership. And then they started showing games slowly but surely. And then they started showing all the games. It was on Fox. Like, I owe Fox my soccer life. Like, they started showing soccer. I'm like, why are they doing this? Like, they don't have to do this shit. And they started showing it. So I just started watching and watching and watching. And through it all, Man U became my favorite team. You know, they played attractive football. They had great players with heart. They would never give up, and they would fight to the death. You know, even if they're down 1-0, 2-0, they'd always figure out a way to come back on the Ferguson. And it's like, you know, it's like people shit on it. Like when you're a Man U fan, people shit on you. It's like you picked an easy team, but back then, Man U had money and they had the players. But those players not only played attractive football, but they played with the heart that Leicester City displayed this season. And that's what attracted me. It's like, it wasn't just the prettiness. It was like the heart. Like, they weren't giving up. You know what I mean? No matter how much money they had, no matter how famous they was. It's like, so you have to have that heart for me to be attracted to you. And Man U had that.
Well, our team in the 90s was a team of absolute pure thoroughbred winners, and that is what we are lacking at the moment. We're lacking not only the attractiveness and the skill and the goal scoring capabilities, but we are lacking that sheer dogged determination. Gary Neville was never winning a Ballon d'Or, but he would fight for the shirt. David Beckham might have won a Ballon d'Or, probably should have won a Ballon d'Or, I think, in 1999.
Yeah.
But he was an absolute fighter. He wasn't a pretty boy player that didn't want to do this or didn't want to do that. He was a fighter, and he's criminally underrated for me, David Beckham. Wonderful footballer.
I fight with people over him all the time. I fight with people about Beckham all the time. Like, they just like, he's a pretty boy. He's just that. No, man, this dude in his prime, he came second one time, right? In the Ballon d'Or. Second. He could have won that shit.
Well, 1999, he came second. And you got to think that all the people who were voting for United players probably split their vote up around Andy Cole, Dwight York, Roy Keane, Schmeichel, Stam, the Keane, Scholes, Giggs, all of them guys probably got some votes that year. So for one United player to stand out above those, Rivaldo actually won it, and Barcelona didn't get out of the Champions League group stage because we knocked them out of the Champions League group stage. So how's Rivaldo winning the Ballon d'Or that season? That wouldn't happen now. To win the Ballon d'Or, you've basically got to win the Champions League and score 10, 15 goals in the process of doing that, as well as having a phenomenal season at home in domestic competition. Yeah, David Beckham, criminally underrated. And his celebrity became because of his ability. You know, no one without that ability gets that level of celebrity. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, exactly. Because I don't think he's that good-looking of a dude myself. So he's got to be. He had to be good.
So how is football now perceived? Because you're on the West Coast at the moment. You're in Los Angeles. How is football perceived over there at the moment? Because obviously you've got a bit of a Galactico side going on there with LA Galaxy, which filled with scousers as well.
And it's like, how is it perceived? It's tough because I always love the game. So I see the game the way I always see it. So I was always into the game. Like, but on the outside, telling people that you like soccer in America is like coming out the closet. Like, like, be ready to get bashed. Like, you like that game? You like that sissy game? Blah, 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 blah. You know, so, like, you get a lot of shit for it. But, you know, I probably love soccer. And you were listening to the Rogan podcast. And it's tough. Here's a tough thing about telling people or introducing people to soccer. Like, so Rogan's an MMA guy. Mm-hmm. He's watching soccer. He was watching the Bayern versus Barca game. And he's...
Bayern Athletico,
my bad. And he's watching people dive and roll over on the floor. Meanwhile, he sits ringside at MMA fights and watch people take kicks to their faces and keep going. And it turns people off. So that's the thing. Like, soccer is one of the most manliest games, but not the most manliest people. Always, people don't always act the most manly. So that's the tough part of introducing people to the game.
It's a frustration for fans in the Heartlands as well. There's no fans that are happy to see players going down easily. And even the pundits at the moment on television, they're almost apologetic for it. They're like, well, you know, he was coming in and the defenders give him a decision to make and, you know, he's looking for the advantage for his team. And it's bullshit. Right. Diving is weak. And I understand that argument. And that is the number one argument that I hear from those Americans and those people who don't like football. And I think they're a shrinking minority at the moment as well. Yeah. I hear that it's boring, which is bullshit when baseball's the number one pastime in America. I'm not having that.
Can I just interject? Like, this, people say there's not enough scoring. Like, American football has the same amount of scoring. It's just that you get 7 points for one score. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, like, a 3-2 game in soccer is 21-14 in football. And then they say, oh, there was a lot of scoring. No, there's three goals. You know, it's, you had three you had five touchdowns, and there's five goals in soccer. It's like you just give more points. American football, I like the game, but it's a complete illusion. Like, you know, I did a thing once, and I wish I had the stats, but it's only actual in a 3-hour game of football. It's only actual like maybe less than 30 minutes of actual playing, because they show replays in between the play and replays after the play till the next play starts. So it looks like the game is in constant motion, but they ain't doing shit.
Yeah, and I read that myself, actually, somewhere, that that American football is one of the worst for it. I think basketball's one of the best for it, because any time that stops, the clock stops, doesn't it? So I think basketball's very high in terms of percentage. Rugby union is also another one that's really awful for how long the ball is out of play in a match. But yeah, American football. And I don't mind American football. I went to a game at the Rose Bowl at UCLA while I was over as well. We went and checked that out, and that was fun. From a cultural perspective, we went to the... I got a mate who lives in LA, and he took us to a tailgate at like 6 in the morning. I'm like, what the fuck are we doing at 6 in the morning, man? We went to there, and there's like these barbecues, these drinking games, these people getting on it. And you know, we got on it for a good 6 hours before we went and got into the stadium. And then we sat in the stadium for about 3 3/4 hours watching the game. But it was great. I wasn't bored. I was getting into it. And, you know, I'll watch American football on TV over here if it's on. I won't search it out and make sure I don't miss a game. But if it's on, I'll watch it. I don't mind it. But I don't understand the argument, like you're just saying, like, how they can say soccer is boring and then sit there for 4 hours and watch the same amount of scores, essentially.
Right. Or baseball is like, listen, I'm Jamaican. I'm supposed to like cricket. I don't like cricket. Cricket is boring to me. You know what I mean? And baseball is like, you can't be a, to me, it's like, how are you a baseball fan if you say soccer is boring? Like, baseball, the players get fat while they're playing it. You know what I'm saying? Like, they stand on the mound and they can chew tobacco in the middle of the game. You can't do that in soccer. You could chew tobacco, spit it out, and then put some more in your mouth and chew it. And you're going to tell me, I'm watching a guy chew. I paid to watch this guy chew. And soccer that is running around all out. And it's boring, so I don't get that argument either. It's just, what's wrong with soccer in America? The thing that's wrong with soccer in America or football, real football in America, is that America didn't invent it. And that's why it's not popular. Because all the sports that America invented are popular here. And that's the issue with soccer here.
Yeah, I think a lot of people I've heard about it have said it's a third world sport. Well, it is, because you literally need one piece of equipment for it. I mean, it's not like hockey or American football, where you're going to have to spend a couple of grand just to be able to go and do a practice session. You need a ball and you need a bit of flat land, or flattish, because you know, you don't even need flat land for it. But yeah,
in Jamaica, we used to have box drinks, and we used to, like, these little boxes of like juice. And we used to stuff one box in another box, and stuff that box in another box, and another box in another box. And we'd have like a square ball, and we'd play with that. But it was solid. We'd play with that.
I've played with a bottle top, like a screw top for a bottle at school when no one had a ball. Play with that. Yeah, you don't even need a ball. That's how good football is. So, as well as your podcast, which is massively entertaining for an American-based, I hope you don't mind me saying that, for an American-based football podcast, because obviously you speak a lot about the Premier League. You really focus on the Premier League. One of your co-hosts is a Spurs fan. You was giving him some shit this week for finishing below Arsenal, which I thought was great, especially deflecting from how shit we've been this season.
You gotta do that. You gotta represent.
But you obviously also a comedian and a big comedy writer as well. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? What the scene's like over there and what you're up to?
Well, I was doing a lot of like comedy writing on some shows, and I've been doing that for a while. And the last three shows I wrote on was Two Broke Girls, Blackish, and then there's a show on NBC called The Carmichael Show. I wrote on that, and that's a really good show. They just got picked up for a third season. It's a young kid named Gerard Carmichael. It's funny, and he's very smart, and you know, this show is basically like his stand-up, the way he thinks. So it was cool to work on that show. But it's like I kind of quit writing right now to just focus on stand-up and to push that aspect of my career further, and also to pitch some show ideas and have the time to pitch show ideas and try to sell or get my own show. You know, saying whether I'm in front of the camera or behind, you know, behind it, producing it, or both. So stand up is like, I had a conversation with Louis at the Comedy Cellar one night, and he's like, "You're good, man, but you're not. Stand up is the only way to get what you everything you want." He said, "It's also the only way to lose everything you have." And he's like, "What you want to do?" And I was like, "All right, let's roll the dice. Let's go for everything or nothing. Fuck it. Why not? What am I here for?"
Louis's not a bad guy to take some advice off on that as well, because he's fucking smashing it across the place, isn't he? A new special every year, writing on mega successful shows all over the place. Do you know Bill Burr? You must know of him at least, but do you know him personally?
No. I was just texting with him last night and this morning, yeah.
Oh, shit. Well, I'm a massive fan of F is for Family. Is that something that you're trying to get into, something like an original series like that?
Yeah, an original series, yeah.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Because F is for Family was fucking wicked. I mean, out of nowhere, that was just unbelievably good. I did enjoy that. I can't wait for the second season of that to come out.
Yeah, and he's got a second season. You guys got Netflix out there?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I use a content blocker, so I actually get the American one because the UK version is shit. So I just use uses a different IP address, and I use the American one. But so, yeah, I get everything that you guys get out there.
Look at you, all illegal tech savvy. I like that.
I don't know if it's illegal. I think it's probably a grey area, but got to be done, man. Because do you know what? I haven't watched a film, a movie on television for so long that about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, I was watching a movie. I can't remember what movie it was, and I was watching it on one of the channels that does have adverts. And every 20 minutes, getting into the film, and then a fucking ad break, and I'm like, what the fuck is this shit? I'm so used to watching Netflix or stuff on demand. I'm like, I'm not fucking standing for this no more. I don't think adverts and television, the way it's currently set up, is going to last too long. Everything's going to be streaming and on demand soon, I think, innit?
Yeah, we're spoiled now. We can't stand commercials. We just want to get into it.
Impatience and everything, innit? But yeah, I suppose that's what it's like. What's Rogan's podcast like for a gaff? Because that looks like... It's probably one of the biggest podcasts in the world, isn't it, I think?
No, it is, and he has some really good guests. You know, like, it's an impressive, like, roster of guests that he has on. Like some really, like reputable people who he'll get a guest, like, somebody that was in a major scandal, and they want to come on and, like give their version of the story. He'll get, you know, Neil deGrasse, you know. It's just crazy, or just some just very niche, super intelligent people in like specific areas, and it's like wow, it's mind blowing. Yeah. So to be on the show, like I've known him for years, we've been doing comedy for a minute, and you know, I met him in New York first, and we ran back into him in LA, and now we both do sets at the store, and I do shows with him on the road, and you know, we just the last one I did a few Fridays ago, just went on, just started talking. I didn't even really know the shit just started talking. He just, like, we were talking regular, and then it was set up, and then he started just talking, and I just, all right, fuck it, I guess it just started.
It's a big show as well. I think it goes out to millions of people every week, tuning in for 3-hour conversations every time it goes, like nothing.
The first time I did it, I was used to every podcast being an hour. So the first time I did it, I was like, this is going long, man. And then I looked at the thing, and it was like an hour and a half in. And I was like, this is going to end soon. And it didn't end until like an hour and a half later. Like, yeah, it's the longest. But now I'm used to it. Before, it's like getting your stamina up for a talking marathon. Like I wasn't ready for that.
Well, I go for 45 minutes on this, and that's just because of the software that I'm using. It uploads it direct once I finish, so 45 minutes is the max for me, unless I update my subscription and pay for a really expensive one. And at the moment, that's all I'm on. I'm on a 45-minute one. So that's it. So Leicester, let's talk about Leicester, because I know that you've been massive on Leicester all year. Yep. Do you think they're going to be able to keep hold of their key talents going into next season, or do you think that there's probably an element of them peaking this season some of the players, maybe even some of the board, thinking, do you know what, fucking cash in, but realistically never going to replicate this?
I think they could finish top four next year. I think they could do that. And I think if you have a chance to do that, why not try? You know what I mean? So it's all these conditions. Like, they have to keep all their players, right? And everybody's going to want their players. But the Premiership has new money. And I was like, and my question is, how rich are those Asian owners? Are they rich, rich? Or are they just okay rich? You know what I mean? Like, do they want to spend money to keep their guys? But I think the advantage that they have is they finished above everybody. A lot of the teams in the Premiership that want to buy them, buy their players, it's like, you're going to be stepping down regardless. So why not stay with the top team that you're on and make another run and try to do this shit? Just for at least a year. Just for at least a year. Like, next year, people will still want those players. You know? So I just hope they stay and finish in the top four.
It was a crazy season watching it develop. You got to like November and December, and there's always one team. You know, we've seen Fulham do it, we've seen Villa do it, we've seen Southampton do it. There's always one team ends up breaking away, or not even breaking away, but being part of that chasing pack that shouldn't be there. That's not a traditional club that you normally find there. But then usually come Christmas, they start to just slowly slip away, drift back into their normal form, and it just didn't happen with Leicester. And I think there was a moment around about February, they hit a form of hitting up just 1-0s, which is what we refer to as championship form, not playing well but still picking up victories. And the closer it got, like March, February, and then into April, you're like, they're going to fucking do it. They're actually going to do it. And no, it was 5,000-1 for a fucking reason, because that shit just doesn't happen ever again. And I don't think it will happen ever again, to be honest.
I mean, it's crazy for them to keep that amount of concentration all year long. But the perfect conditions, like, the league is not as strong as it was, like, the early 2000s, late 90s, you know what I mean? So if anybody was going to do it, it was a team like this. But they definitely showed, like, a championship mentality, like, down the last few months. Like, I was in Australia, like, the beginning of April towards the... When did I come back? I was in there for the Melbourne Comedy Festival. So they're, like, a day ahead. I'd have to, like, go to a casino Monday night, like, 1 in the morning or 2 in the morning just to watch them win some shitty 1-0 games. You know what I mean? But it was worth it. I'd get to bed, like, 6 in the morning. Because then I'd have to see Man U win some shitty 1-0 games, or blow a 1-0 lead and end up tying or some shit.
That's too more likely.
Yeah.
Where do you think we need to strengthen? Because...
Oh, I got it.
Go on then. Just go straight on.
Since Beckham left and Scholes started getting old, we never had any really good attacking midfielders. Attacking creative midfielders. I can't remember those guys ever being replaced on a long-term basis. You know what I mean? And that's where...
We never had a crosser as good as Beckham since Beckham has gone. Not one. We had Antonio Valencia did a couple of decent runs and a couple of decent seasons. One where he got player of the year for a ton of assists. But yeah, a central attacking midfielder. I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Yeah, we've tried. We haven't had, like, Scholes just stopped playing a few years ago. Like how long? There's been no Scholes replacement, no Beckham replacement, no. We just haven't had any creative midfielders, and we need, if we could get two or three, even two. But we need that. Like even now, I don't know if Rooney's going to stay, but he should just be in a creative midfielder. He shouldn't even try to be a forward.
No, definitely shouldn't be a forward no more. I like him as that number 10, just off the front line sort of thing. I think he can do a decent job there. Yeah. I was just thinking, as you were saying that then, we didn't replace Roy Keane in 2005. We've gone 11 years without a real combative central midfielder, really. Owen Hargreaves had a bit of a shout for it, but his knees was fucked, so he was never going to do it for us. We've had a poor midfield since the mid-2000s. We've not really had
for a decade we've had a poor midfield, and we still won championships with that poor midfield.
Like, and a European Cup.
And a European Cup. Like, even when I looked at, like, the year that we won, when Ferguson's last year, like, every game that we played against, like, the top teams in the league, like, on paper, like, how are we winning this? Look at these guys. I'd rather have their midfield than our midfield. You know what I mean? And those games were ugly, you know, but we won. But like, we just haven't had... It's been a decade since we had a solid midfield. Like, imagine that. A team of Man U's stature haven't had a great midfield.
And one of the best, we let go for free with Paul Pogba.
Yeah.
Can you imagine he'd stuck around, what he'd have done for us the last 3-4 years?
Don't bring that up. That shit hurts. That shit fucking hurts.
Yeah. The way we won it in 2013, that season as well, I'm sure we came from behind a record number of times. We go down 1-0 and manage to pull victories out of our ass. Right, Van Persie, instrumental. Rooney, instrumental. De Gea, instrumental. But yeah, like I said, a soft centre, really, that year. It was a strange year. Fergie's team talks were supposedly something along the lines of, I'm an old man, this is boring, go and entertain me, which, when you contrast that with what we've been getting this season with Louis van Gaal, you think, fucking hell, what I would give for a hark back to them days. But I think next season it's so much a dumb deal that I'm bored of fucking talking about it with Mourinho. I am absolutely sure Mourinho's coming in, but then
you what?
Pardon?
You sure?
I'm sure it's him. I'm not sure it's the best move, but I'm sure it's him.
I'm sure it's not the best move. I'm 1,000% sure this is not the best move, because we have a... Here's a problem with England. Like, people have been saying it for years, but it just really hit me this year. When I look at Spurs and see... Like, Spurs is not a smart team. Like, they're only good because they blew their money. And then their cheap owner was like, all right, I ain't spending any more money. And then they had to let the academy players come through, you know? And then they had... Dele Alli was like a cheap buy. They just prove to you that there are good young British players in these academies, on all of these teams, and we have to stop buying and let these players come through. And the good thing about Man U this year was our injuries. Like, injuries are never a good thing, but until this year, when Van Gaal had all those injuries and he had to let all these academy players play, and they played as if they'd been here before, like, both with Pterodactyl Arms Jackson. Did he ever look out of place? Maybe one play.
Nope.
And then, is it Fosu Mensah? Who's the African kid?
Yeah, Fosu Mensah. Well, he's Dutch. I've been a big fan of him since he joined. Oh, my God. He's unbelievable.
I say put him in the midfield.
Yeah, I agree on that.
Like, fuck the right back. Put him in the midfield. That dude is everything. He's the heart and soul of your team. And, you know, Rashford... And just, you know, there weren't many youth mistakes this year, you know, and it's just because we were desperate. We were desperate.
None of them have come into the team and underperformed. They've all not just stepped up, they've stepped up and made the first team players look bad, to be honest.
Right. So it makes me wonder, what the fuck else is in that academy? Let's see. Let's go dig up that academy, get these young players out there,
and see what we got. There's a couple more. There's a couple more defenders. One called Axel Tuanzebe. He's from the Congo. And there's another called Roshan Williams, who's a local Mancunian lad. Both of them guys, I would have no hesitation starting on Saturday in the cup final. Neither of them. They're fucking magic, the pair of them. Success is certain with both of them. It's just a case of them getting game time. And we've also got another kid who's 15 years old, right? Who is... I speak to some of the coaches around the ground, and one of the coaches told me, this kid is going to win a Ballon d'Or one day. He is the best we've ever produced. Now think of what's come through the academy. Giggs, Scholes, Beckham, George Best, Duncan Edwards, Bobby Charlton. And I'm like, you know what you're saying, don't you, when you say he's the best we've ever produced? Normally, when you go down there, they'd be like, oh, this is the best kid we've had since Scholesy, or this is the best kid we've had since Wes Brown's come through, or just something like that. But no, they're going, this kid is the best ever. Go Google him in a bit. Go look Angel Gomez on YouTube and go and see how Angel Gomez... he's like a Messi, so he plays probably as a number 10. Real short, unbelievable lateral movement, a touch that you couldn't ask for. Unbelievable. And 15 years old, playing in the under 18 side at the moment and smashing it. So there's definitely more where what this year's team has come from. Definitely more.
And that's my worry about Mourinho. Like, we're trying to win now. He's just going to buy. These guys will never see the light of day. They'll end up somewhere else. Like, Ferguson is a great coach, but he made some mistakes. He figured he had a midfield, you know, so he never played Pogba. And Pogba wanted out. And it's like, these players are going to want out. Or they're going to just... We're going to lose out, man. And it's like, we need to play these kids.
How can you tell Rashford to go back to the under-18s now? How can you say he can't? Can
but Mourinho, if he doesn't get the immediate results, he will. Or he'll put him on loan somewhere. He'll do something stupid. Because Mourinho is about his own legacy. Mm. He's about win now. I need to win now because I want to look like the group. And right now his main competitor is Pep. So this guy is not coming here for Man U. He's coming for himself. And that's what I'm afraid of. And I hope our GMs see this shit. Our chairmans, they have to know this.
So if you didn't want Mourinho, who do you think we should be looking to then next season? I'm pretty sure it's already a done deal, so you know, I'm almost not even thinking about anybody else. So who would you say if you don't want Mourinho and you're in charge, who are you going getting?
Like, listen, I don't have any great ideas, right? I don't have any great ideas of who should be the next coach. But, like, so I'm thinking future, macro, not small picture. So I would either say something crazy like keep Van Gaal, right? Or promote Giggs. Or keep Van Gaal, have Giggs under him one more year, then get rid of Van Gaal and make Giggs the whole deal. You know what I mean? But I'm sure there's probably, like Pochettino came from somewhere. Like, you got to find somebody, you know? You got to find somebody. But
my whole issue that I've had with the process of appointing people, the way we appointed Moyes, Fergie went round to his house and went, you're the United manager. And he went, oh, shit. It wasn't like he interviewed for it. He wasn't asked about how he would do if he was given the keys to Manchester United. Like, what's your 5 and 6 year plan? He was like, you're a United manager, sign here. And I don't know how it went with Van Gaal. I think we just approached him and said, will you be the manager? It sounds like we've gone to Mourinho, or he's come to us and we've sort of gone, yeah, okay, and we've come together, but we've not really put this job out to tender. We've not gone and interviewed 5 or 6 people. We've not scouted out where the best coaches are. Because like you said, the best coaches might not necessarily be the biggest names. The best coach might be some guy in the Portuguese league who's managing a team in fifth, but he's got a knack about him. He's got a way with everything.
It's a talent. It's a talent, man. Coaching is a talent, you know. And you send scouts all over the world to look for talented players. You should also have a coaching scout who goes around the world, watch coaches, like go about their business and see if they got it. It's like Wenger. Wenger don't got it no more. He used to have it. He doesn't have it no more. It's over the heart of like really, and that's why Ferguson probably quit. It's like, this is my last like coaching top class energy in this season. I don't have it anymore. I'm out. And luckily he went out on top. But it's something inside of you, man. You gotta have it to give to the players. Like Ranieri had it this year, because that's just a hodgepodge group of guys that nobody wanted, and he took them mentally to this level. And you got to be able to. Just say I have to have that spirit to take people to that level, and we need to find a coach that can take people to that level. Like
he did it with so few players as well, Ranieri. There was only 14 players played over like 10 matches or something along those lines. I haven't got the exact stat, but it was ridiculously low how many players he actually used. I mean, for one, you've got to be mega fortunate, and we weren't that fortunate on the injury front, which really hampered us, I think. But like I said, there's a mentality that he's took them and he's said to them, you're not relegation candidates this year. Here's what you're going to do. And they've gone out and done it. And he always said in press conferences, oh, it's the 40 points, it's the 40 points, I just want to survive relegation. But I wonder, come like January, was he thinking, let's fucking do this, let's... You know, was he saying... Because what people say in press conferences is totally different to what they're going to be saying when they go in the dressing room. I would love to have known at what point he said to the players, you can fucking do this. I believe in you. Look what you've done so far. You're ahead of the pack. Here's what we need to do to see this league out. There must have been a conversation that he had with the players. I don't think... Cause I think when he got the 40 points, it was only... It was like January, I think, something like that. And he was top of the league, I think, at the time. And he was like, oh, we're not going to get relegated now. And everyone's like, hey, 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 isn't he so funny? But I think back in his mind, he's like, fucking check this out. Watch what I'm going to do with these. And I'd love to have known what he was doing with that, because it's something that everyone should be aspiring to. He's shook the league up. The style of play that he's brought with Leicester has completely shook the league up. And it's shown Arsenal up. It's shown us up. It's shown Manchester City up. It's shown Liverpool up. It's shown Chelsea up. Fucking hell, they fell off big time this year. It's shown every major club up for all the money that we're throwing at everything. And he's looked at underrated players. And I hate the term, but he's moneyballed it almost. He's looked at what...
No, he definitely moneyballed it. For sure, he definitely moneyballed. But that's the thing, like, I'm trying to figure out... That's the question you asked about when did he figure out that he could win this. Like, that goes through my mind. That kind of haunts me, because it's a very important moment in his life and everybody's life. If there's a moment you could bottle up the idea or the feeling that, you know what, I could do better than just this thing that's just okay. You know what I mean? You know, and I don't know what it was, but I guess a part of it had to be, this is why the season was perfect for him, because Chelsea was in descent. And him seeing that must have spurred him on. Like, to be in January above Chelsea, a team that he used to coach, and he's like, if they're down there and we're here, why can't... And everybody else is kind of below us. And he probably, from coaching here before, recognized that this league is not as strong as it used... It's not his first time in this league. He's like, he had to notice that the quality of the top teams is down, and be like, listen, I'm with this team. They've done this so far. Based on the teams I used to coach and how this league used to be, you know what? I think we could do more. I think we can win this, because this is not as strong a league as it used to be when I used to coach in it. And you guys are good enough to do it. I think all his history helped. I think Chelsea being in free fall helped. And I just think. And just his age, and he had to just right temperament. He's not like an asshole. Like, he might have had an asshole phase, but he's grown out of it. You know what I mean? It's like age and wisdom, and just he just aged right.
He seems like chilled out, doesn't he? He seems massively chilled out, the way his whole demeanor. I think I would love to know at what point he was like, "We can do this," and how he transmitted that to his players, because that group of players probably have their own evaluation of themselves, as they probably thought, we're good enough for being a mid-table Premier League team. How did he take them from that mid-table survival mentality to winners? And what's going to be interesting is how this summer goes, if they're able to keep hold of their big names. And I think Kante is the most important one of all of those. And I think they'll have money, because the TV deal that's happened in the UK.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone's got money. So they won't have a financial need to let anybody go. They'll only let people go if the player goes, I want to fucking go. Because that's how it's going to work.
I mean, I think the good thing about them this season is they weren't in any extra football competition. So the 14 guys they had was fine. Mm-hmm. Now they have to buy guys.
Yep.
But you have to buy guys, because you got Champions League now. You have to buy guys, not to replace your guys, but with the mentality of your guys from this season.
Yeah, they've got a gel. 50% of transfers fail, so you've got to expect whoever they bring in might not, you know, hit the same sort of mentality and togetherness that this team clearly has got. I mean, it was one of the most interesting seasons ever, and I think next season could be even more interesting, because obviously we've got Guardiola coming in at City. We might have Mourinho in at United.
Say that.
Chelsea are going to be more competitive than they was this year. Like I said, I think Leicester, top four, top five, regardless, I think next year. I think they'll be carried quite a way into the season, but I don't think they'll win it again. I think Spurs are going to be deadly. If Arsenal get a couple of signings... It's the mentality of the signings that Wenger signs. He doesn't sign players with that, like we were saying about United, we haven't had a Roy Keane. If he had a Roy Keane, if he had a dead-eyed striker, Arsenal would have won this league back in February, but they haven't got that. And he never signs that, so I'm not worried about Arsenal.
And he doesn't inspire in his players either. And that's the thing. Like, if you go back to Keown and just all the guys he had, like, you know, Patrice, the guys he had that thing.
Mm.
And he doesn't get guys with that thing. Chelsea's soft, man. Chelsea used to be a finesse. I mean, Arsenal used to be a finesse team, but they were a fucking strong, aggressive team when they won championships. You know, the Invincibles, like, they would knock you off the ball. Perez was fine. He was flying. And Henri. But that midfield was a tough-ass midfield. And he doesn't have that.
He doesn't sign that. And I think that's indicative of himself, really. I think he's the blame for that. He signs players which are excellent technically, but he doesn't sign players that are, I mean, even if he signed someone like Joey Barton, just an arsehole, and just had an arsehole in his team that just refused to lose and would kick people and do this, that and the other, but it's against his philosophy and it's against his mentality, so he's never going to do it, so we're never going to have to worry about him doing it. But I think I'm excited about next year already. I've not been so excited about going into a season, and the problem is that the top four mentality of, like, there's four big teams and everyone qualifies for Champions League every year. We're going to have to forget that straight away, because there's going to be seven or eight teams going for this next year. That are, you know, and it, every year after this, you're going to see maybe two or three different teams in the Champions League every single year. And half of me thinks that's an awesome thing for football. Half of me think that's going to be a terrible thing for United, because we're never going to dominate like we did in the 90s and in the 2000s. This is going to be graft from now on.
Yeah, that was a lot, though. You know, that's a lot of titles. Like, imagine if Southampton doesn't sell players. What are we going to do? What is the league going to do? Like, they just finished, what, they finished sixth?
Yeah.
Right? They just finished sixth. What if they don't sell? What if they keep the players from their academy and add those to the dudes that they got right now? British football is in trouble. You know what I'm saying? Like, as the order of it as they know it. So
yeah, there's an economy. Yeah. Spurs sell their players. Everton sell their players. Southampton sell their players. West Ham sell their players. All those players end up top heavy in the top four sides from all of those clubs. And we saw it last season when Everton said, we want 50 million for Stones, which is ludicrous. But they was like, yeah, well, if you're not going to pump up 50 million, go fuck yourself, we're not selling him. And that represents a change. And Leicester might be the team to benefit from that this year by saying, yeah, we don't need to sell. Unless the player kicks up a fuss, go fuck yourself, take a walk, we're not selling him. Which, overall, I think the standard in the league will go up as a whole, but it'll be more competitive as a whole as well. And we'll think it's a weak league, but it might actually be stronger. The proof will be in how far everyone goes in the Champions League, I think.
In the future, I believe it will be stronger. You know, if we keep our young players and let them come through, it'll be stronger for sure. Like, there's some gifted people in England, man, and we just got to believe that. Stop buying as much.
And stop, from a national team point of view, stop wasting European Championship spots on shit players. Like, Jack Wilshere has played one, or he started one Premier League game this year, and he's going to the Euros. Like, he started one more game than me in the Premier League this year, and he's going to the Euros. Like, I shouldn't be able to say shit like that, should I?
But who else would you rather than take? Like, I believe in the ability of Jack Wilshere. You know what I mean? So
if he's got ability, but his ability is no good if you're never able to be fit for it. I'd have took Noble. I'd have took Noble and Carrick over Delph and Wilshere.
I wouldn't have taken them over Wilshere. Maybe Delph, but not over Wilshere. I don't believe in Delph. Not yet.
Wilshere's the kind of guy, though, to have a fucking amazing first game in the group stage and then be injured, and you'd be like, how did we not see that coming?
Nah, but then we got backup. We got backup, right?
True. But I would take, there's one player I'd take a risk on, and that would be Sturridge. I think Sturridge's one of the most natural gifted strikers we've got as a nation, and he's injury prone. So I think if we're going to take an injury prone player, he'll have to be in. And I'm going to have to wrap it up. There's 22 seconds, so hopefully I'll get an outro in time. So thank you to Ian for joining us. This was a good chat.
Thanks, man.
Everybody go check him out at Ian Edwards Comedy on Twitter. Let him know you've listened to the podcast. And if you're in LA, check out his website and make sure you go see this guy doing his thing. There's 5 seconds left. I'll just leave it to you to say goodbye, mate.
Thank you. One love, Man U fans. And my